It's the best time of the year. Football season.
Atlantic keeps it, runs 20, 15, to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Joel Atlantic!
Your number one source for Cyclones football. It's former Cyclones talking Cyclones on CycloneFanatic.com.
Landing out of the shotgun, looking to throw. He fires to the end zone for Daly. Touchdown, Iowa State!
This is Barely Audible with Jeff Woody, Zach Spears, and Austin Arnott on CycloneFanatic.com.
Yes, hello Cyclone Nation. Welcome on into this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. I'm former Cyclone offensive lineman Zach Spears, and we'll be joined shortly by former Cyclone greats quarterback Austin Arnott and running back Jeff Woody. And today we'll also be joined by former Cyclone running back Alexander Robinson. He'll drop by for a visit and talk some football with us here a little later on. It was another tough loss after a pretty good showing by the Cyclones on Saturday afternoon. Baylor trailed by 2 touchdowns most of the day and scored 17 of their 24 second-half points in the fourth quarter and knocked down a last-second field goal to complete a come-from-behind win 45-42 on Saturday in Ames. Baylor ran for nearly 500 yards on Saturday and totaled 650 yards of offense in the win. Iowa State's offense looked the part for the first three quarters, gaining over 450 yards before being held to just 7 total yards in the fourth quarter. Quarterback Joel Landing was phenomenal as he went 17 of 23 with 261 yards and 2 touchdowns. Running back Mike Warren looked really good again as he ran for 130 yards and the offense didn't even punt until the fourth quarter. But when you play well for almost the entire game and still lose, there's obviously plenty to talk about. And with that, let's bring in the guys and get this thing started. All right, guys. One word to describe how you feel about the game on Saturday, besides the awesome tailgate party Austin took me to, a donut club party, man, you know how to welcome back a Texan to Iowa. That's for sure, Austin. But the one word to describe how I feel about the game is disappointing. I was disappointed in the game because Iowa State looked like the better team for a lot of that game and should have won. I know a lot of people feel good about the strides that the team is making, especially from where they started 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I felt like they should have won the game, and I'm disappointed. What's your one word, Austin?
I'm going to go on the contrary of Zach, and I'm going to say relief. You look at all the things we did offensively that were very good. Offensive line was better. Quarterback play was better. These guys now know on offense that, you know, Baylor's defense is not great, but they're not a slouch as well. So these guys now know they can compete at a high level and they have confidence. So that, to me, my word is relief.
And I'm sorry, I didn't introduce you properly, ladies and gentlemen. That's the Hall of Famer, Austin Arnott, former quarterback of the Iowa State Cyclones. And now over to just Jeff Woody. Jeff, what's your one word?
I have to go 2 words because 1 word is like really negative. I'm pleasantly surprised, because if I would have just said surprised, it'd be like, I have no expectations.
Yes.
I'm pleasantly surprised with how they played, because Baylor's not a small defense. They have some relatively big dudes on the defensive line, and Iowa State pushed them around a lot.
Yeah.
And we were talking on air. As the game was going in the group chat, which we will welcome in the fourth member of that later, but they had 2 drives back to back where there's combined 26 plays, 21 runs, and 2 touchdowns. And I was just saying, and we all kind of agreed, like those were just FU drives. Like, we're gonna run the ball, stop us. And Iowa State has very rarely ever been able to do that against a Big 12 opponent, and they finally did. In this, the fifth game the coaches have played,
Yeah, Austin, the offense was good, and Jeff was just talking about the offense was really good. What did you see that made it work so well? The number one thing that I saw, and I'll let you get to it, Austin, and you and I obviously, we were with each other the entire week, and so we've dissected this thing 1,000 times, 1,000 different ways together. But as I told you during the game and after the game, the offense, they didn't try to do anything complex. They kept it simple, and it worked. And the offensive line finally played together as one cohesive unit. And obviously that helped with the way they were able to run the ball, protect Landing, no pressure. So that's what I saw out of the offense. What about you, quarterback?
Yeah, I agree. The game plan was simple. They wanted to have Joel throw easy passes, get Mike Warren the ball a numerous amount of times. And the one thing that I see and that made things a lot easier was how great the play calling was. I mean, it makes things a lot easier.
Amen.
With absolutely, and it makes things a lot easier when you can run the football. So that's why a lot of times last year, where you know we watched Mike Warren and you know Sam Richardson was having a good day, or whomever it was, Joe Lanning after that, there was times where we're like, okay, this play works well because the linebackers bid up on just a little fake by the quarterback. What I mean by that, guys, is when you see Joe Lanning back there in the pocket and he just sets that ball in front of him before he starts to take his drop. That's just a small play fake in the shotgun. But that thing right there, in the second and third quarter rolled around, those backers and those safeties had their eyes in the backfield, and that allowed us to make those deep, you know, those intermediate throws over the middle, those deep balls downfield, because we had, you know, there was a, you know, not respect of the running game, but they knew Mike Warren could gash them at any point. So that was impressive for me.
What about you, Woody?
I think that it was a total group, and all 11 dudes, a total group of guys doing the little things on offense. Like, on DeShante Jones' touchdown, and I broke this down on CFTV this
week.
He's
a pretty good freshman, by the way.
Dude, he's real good.
Love it.
Real good. So on that DeShante Jones touchdown, the linebacker to his side, he was to the boundary. It was two receivers to the boundary, one receiver to the field, a tight end in the box, and a running back in the box. Well, he was the number two receiver to the field. The linebacker to his side was supposed to wall him off and keep him from getting over the middle. Well, he just about made that dude fall over who was trying to wall him off. And then once he caught the ball, not one but two receivers let him into the end zone. Like, he made one guy miss, but then there were still three defensive backs that could have made the tackle. Well, Dondre Daly was downfield blocking and held one of them up. And then Hakeem Butler came and picked off the other one one of the other ones as he was getting in the end zone. So, and also in order to get there, Lanning didn't get. I mean, he could have sat down and made breakfast in the amount of time that he had to throw that ball. Yeah. So absolutely. It was guys doing the little things, all 11 of them at the same time, which allows playmakers like DeShante Jones and like Dondre Daly and like Joel Lanning and like Mike Warren. It allows them to do that. And I think in the final three drives that Iowa State had, they stopped doing the little things because they could only focus on the big thing of just, we have to move the ball, and they stopped being able to have fun. So the thing that impressed me the most is how good the little things were. And that's going to come into the fourth quarter. That's going to keep happening. But I was super pleased with the offense.
Yeah. The DeShante Jones touchdown, I thought it was interesting because the play before, Alan Lazard scored a touchdown, and I was on the field for it, and they got called back for a illegal man downfield, which was a sign of things to come for the day, as there were several of those types of penalties and procedure things. Those small little penalties coming back to creep back in and haunt the Cyclones, and obviously didn't haunt them too much because they still scored 42 points, but you know they did lose the football game, and it just is. That's why I keep going back to the word disappointing. It's disappointing when a team plays as well as they did. That I feel like what they do, punt twice, and they didn't punt till the fourth quarter. They only missed like two or three third downs all day, and we're still sitting here talking about a loss. You know, so that's why my word was disappointing in going back and thinking about it. But you know, they only got 7 yards in the whole fourth quarter, and they went completely away from Lazard. Were they taking Lazard out of the game, or just wasn't part of what they were trying to go to in the fourth quarter, Jeff? And your analogy in the Des Moines Register column that you did about the dad about to beat – or the son about to beat the dad for the first time ever, I think was a perfect analogy for the situation, and it may be something that continues to haunt this team, at least through this year, if they are playing well in the fourth quarter with the lead.
So the analogy was, for those that didn't read it, was like when you know when you're about you're competing against your dad for the one thing that you've never been able to beat him in, and I just compared it to like an egg race, and all you could think of where you're like holding an egg on a spoon and you'd have to pass to your partner. Well, pretty much they had played so well, the only thing you could think about at the end of that is by the time they were getting ready to pass the egg, instead of thinking run, 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 they were thinking don't drop the egg, don't drop the egg. So it wasn't that game plan wise Iowa State screwed it up. It's just like, so on two different drives, Iowa State was, they were third and long to force them to punt. Well, the second down play on the second drive, on the first time they punted, the second down play was guy jumps off sides, apparently, I don't think he does, but apparently gets back, and Bobek fire snaps it back there. Well, if, yeah, it's a bad call, but if that's a good snap, Joel catches it, throws it in the third row of the stands, or completes a pass, it's still third and three or third and two. Well, the little things of not getting the ball back to the quarterback, Bobek rolls it on the ground back to the quarterback, and Joel just has to fall on it, and it's third and nine.
Yeah.
The next drive, they run a perfectly executed the play that DeShante Jones last week scored on, where you had a two-on-one where with two receivers to one side. You have a two-on-one. Number one receiver blocks the guy. Number two runs a bubble behind him. Throw it to Mike Warren, hit him in stride. It bounces off his hands. You're third and long. So it's not that they went, like, game plan schematically, it was bad in the fourth quarter. They just stopped executing. They stopped making plays because they were thinking so much. Yeah. They were thinking so much about, like, don't lose this game. Like, we've got this game won. Don't lose. All we have to do is not lose. And all of a sudden, it's you'd think about not losing and you start losing.
Yep.
So it was just they stopped executing in the fourth quarter, and you can't do that against good teams.
Yep. And with that, I want to bring in the fourth member of today's broadcast of Barely Audible. We are joined now by former Iowa State running back great Alexander Robinson. He is the fourth all-time leading rusher in Iowa State football history with 27 touchdowns, and he had 13 games with at least 100 yards rushing. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the one, the only, and the fourth member of our group text, and more importantly, one of our very good friends, Alexander Robinson. Hey, Rob, are you there?
I am here, guys.
Oh, wow. Coming in nice and clear from where are you dialing in from this evening? Not Vegas like last time when you were hammered drunk on the show.
the waters of Lake Minnetonka is where he's calling in from.
Yeah, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. But I will say I'm not in Vegas this time, and I have not had any drinks. So I'll be good.
So, A-Rob, when you finish...
Man, you get A-Rob on for one show, and there's a freaking police siren in the back. Come on, A-Rob.
Hey, guys, we're called Barely Audible for a reason. It's hard to hear sometimes, so just keep that in mind. But A-Rob,
or it's hard to listen to us.
Yeah, yeah, that too. A-Rob, you played for the Minnesota Vikings for a while. You played with Adrian Peterson, all those guys. When Teddy Bridgewater went down, obviously you follow the Vikings still, but when Teddy Bridgewater went down and they made this trade for Sam Bradford, did you think the Vikings would be this good this year with Sam Bradford and since Khalil and Peterson got injured?
No, I'll be honest. I didn't see that happening. Going into the season, yeah, I think I made a prediction that they would. And I think I talked about this in our group text, but I had them at 14-2, just looking at their schedule and going into the season. But then when guys started to go down, I never thought they would start this well, to be 4-0, have the Texans, I think, this week, and then have a bye week. I never saw this happening. Not at all.
I know Austin's very happy about his Vikings being undefeated so far, right, Austin?
I'm ear to ear over here, man. Just keep on talking about that great defense.
That's all you
Sam
guys.
Sam Bradford can't miss. Kyle Rudolph has emerged as a guy. Kyle Rudolph's a guy now, man. It's great.
But you're worried about their rushing offense, though, aren't you, Austin?
Well, until Monday night, I was worried. Yeah. Jerick McKinnon looks like he's going to be all right. 18 carries for 85 yards and a touchdown.
Yeah.
And that boy, hey, you know what he reminds me of? That man that we're talking to, A-Rob, 33.
A-Rob. Speaking of –
much better.
I want to talk about rushing offenses because if you don't know, Baylor ran for damn near 500 yards on our defense on Saturday, A-Rob. And you watched the game, and what did you see out of Iowa State's defense that was allowing Baylor to gash them right up the literally right up the middle all day long?
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of the runs, huge runs, were just splits down the middle. And the Shock Linwood, that running back, he had several large gains where he was just making people miss downfield. And a lot of it was bad tackling and terrible angles.
That's a good point. This team is a really bad tackling team.
The stats came out on Monday. There was 22 missed tackles.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
I don't think
22
a guy who averaged under 4 yards a carry. Even the quarterback was making people miss.
Which
God, this guy.
Yeah, big white dude making people miss. That's not good.
He's like a lumbering tree, and he's making people miss.
Yeah.
But that was terrible angles and then just bad tackling. Just bad tackling all around.
Austin, you got any questions for him?
I got one for Mr. A-Rob. A-Rob, you got all these young backs. I mean, I know you haven't had ample enough time to watch all of them because Warren got most of the snaps. But we've got a couple guys in Montgomery. And then, Jeff, how do I pronounce the other kid's name?
Nwangu.
There you go. We've got a couple young backs here that, you know, not going to give Mike Warren a run for his money, but we've got a few guys that we can lean on in the future. I mean, what's it like? You played in the backfield, A-Rob, when, you know, mostly it was just you for the most part. And then, you know, as it came on, there was Jeremiah Schwartz, there's Bo Williams, there was a guy named Jeff Woody who, you know, who knows how hard that guy ran it. The white Larry Zonka, if you will. the Larry Zonka, excuse me. Larry Zonka's white.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's like saying the black Alexander Robinson.
Exactly what I meant, a white running back. What is it like to have multiple guys that can –
coachable.
High motor. What is it like to have guys that in the same room that all, you know, probably are deserving of snaps, but, you know, the younger guys are going to have to wait their turn? What's your opinion on that, A-Rob?
I think it's good. I think it keeps people on their toes. I think it keeps Warren on his toes. It doesn't let him relax. There's always competition in that room. So, hey, if you're not performing, Mike, hey, we've got Montgomery. And how do you say the other guy's name, Woody?
Just call him Kenny.
Just call him
That's
Kenny?
That's his first name. Just call him Kenny.
The guy returning the kicks, right? He returns the kickoff. Yeah, he's pretty nice. I like him. I like him as well. But it keeps that competition in the room so nobody can ever relax, because as a young guy coming into college football, you want to play. You want to play right away because you have all these people back home that are expecting you to go and show out for your town or your city or your high school, and you want to get there and prove that you belong. So I think that competition within the room is the biggest thing for Mike. It's, hey, you relax for a second and you have Montgomery. You have Kene pushing you to come take snaps from you. So I think that's the biggest thing for him.
Jeff, what do you got for A-Rob?
We're playing at Oklahoma State this weekend.
Yeah.
I don't think we've done this. Power rankings, hardest road venues to play at. Or let's do Mount Rushmore. Top four hardest places on the road you had to play at. On the spot. No preparation. Right now.
That's a good question. Good question.
Let's go Nebraska right away. Okay. Nebraska. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've never really, you know, and this is funny. I've never played in Lincoln Stadium. I played like two or three plays ever in Lincoln Memorial Stadium.
Did you have swine flu? Did you have swine flu that game too,
yeah. A-Rob? That was a game where like 85 people were throwing up on the sidelines.
And I still couldn't get in the game. And half the offensive line has appendicitis and swine flu, and my sorry ass still can't get in the damn game.
Here's the thing. I gotta take y'all back one quick. Do y'all remember when they put Trey Basinger in the game and he looked up against and saw that Dominican
Sue?
Does anyone remember?
The film the next day was classic.
Sue what picked him up by his wrist and suplexed him.
Like, what row did he end up in the stands?
He literally grabbed Trey by his shoulder pads. And Trey Basinger, if you Cyclone fans remember, 6'8", 325 pounds, size 17 shoe. I mean, just as big as Calicio Simile, if not bigger. Grabbed him by his shoulder pads and threw him at Jerome Tiller. Threw him. Like, said, get out of my way.
Awesome. Oh, man.
Awesome. Okay, so Aram's got Nebraska. What else?
Nebraska won.
I'll give you A&M because
there you go.
Everybody was in sync. It wasn't that they're not that close because they have the track surrounding the field, but everybody being in sync at the same time just made them a terrible place to play.
Yep.
Texas, my redshirt freshman year, not when I actually redshirted, I went down there.
Was Colt playing quarterback at that time, or was that before? Or was that
it was Colt McCoy?
I believe Colt was still there.
Yep, it was Colt McCoy.
I think they were ranked in the top five at the time or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
I just went back and rewatched the Texas game that we won there, y'all senior year. Hey, Rob, you played pretty well that game. And Austin, I still think it's my favorite throw you ever made in that game. First touchdown of the game, you get flushed out of the pocket and hit money on the run on a crossing pattern. He breaks a tackle and scores a touchdown. But, hey, Rob, you were gashing Texas right out the middle. What did that feel like?
That was before you answer that. That was also the site of one of the biggest bullshit calls when A-Rob's torso is in the end zone.
Yep.
Oh
yep.
My goodness!
And they rule him down on the one.
Yep. Yep.
Oh man. Yeah, that game is great memories. Great memories. But I don't know if I did a whole lot. I mean, if you go back and watch the film,
you better stop. It wasn't me. This is the one thing I want to say about A-Rob, and for you listening out there, know. You know, I'm not the brightest guy. We can go there. We can say that.
I took care of business.
We took care of business. Hey, Rob, how many times did I ask you what the protection was?
Were you in concussion protocol?
At least, at least 10 times a game by Lito. We're like, we can see seven, right? See seven, right? And see seven, right?
Hey,
But I mean, the crazy part about that, the crazy part about that too is the protection with Herman's offense. He signaled it in. Like, you didn't have to guess and you didn't have to call it on the field. Like, he told you what the protection was.
Well, I had to get the rest of the play, bro. You know what I'm saying? I had to get the rest of it down first. Now worry about the protection later.
A whole lot, man. At the QB position, you got a whole lot going through your mind. Oh, man.
Okay, so you're giving us three: Nebraska, Texas A&M, and Texas. What's the what's one more of the toughest places you ever had to play?
I was going to say Oklahoma, but they whooped us so bad.
They kicked our ass so much there.
It wasn't really every time. Every time.
Missouri. Surprisingly, Missouri.
Yeah. That place can get loud.
Yeah. Surprisingly. Well, we had half the guys in our field looking at the Golden Girls, so that was a problem as well.
Oh, God, yeah. God, yeah.
Hey, speaking of the girls, Oklahoma State got those honeys, too.
TCU ain't bad either. Nope. TCU ain't bad either.
Here's my top three, okay? And this is pro and college football, but we'll go the Oklahoma State. I mean, it was bad. I'm not going to name any coaches, but the Chizik era when we played down there, there was a brochure, a game day program brought back in the meeting room, and there was a flippage through there until we found the cheerleaders. So there was Oklahoma State. God, the Golden Girls for sure. And then the Seagulls out in Seattle. let me tell you what. That's another story for another time. But they are gorgeous.
They are. Seattle, great place.
Hopefully my girl doesn't listen to the show.
I'll send her the link.
Yeah, we'll hit everybody's link.
Have me sleeping on my own couch, man.
Hey, Rob, are you going to make it to any Iowa State football games this year where the listeners can shake your hand, give you a high five, take photos with you like they were doing Troy Davis on Friday and Saturday?
God, I'm definitely going to try to, man. My schedule is super crazy, but I'm definitely going to try to. Hopefully a November game. If I can swing it with my schedule, I'm gonna get down to a November game. Got to get to at least one this year.
It'll be cold, man.
He's a Minnesotan. You're a Texan. Well, cold to you is different than cold to him.
True. Yeah, cold is relative.
Austin, quick. What's your favorite A-Rob story? It could be in school. It could be off the field. It could be on the field. It could be in the locker room. What's your favorite A-Rob story?
Free today.
I can't tell my favorite. We were in the summer. We were in Iowa City fooling around. So I can't tell my favorite story. But my second favorite story is, y'all remember we played Army, and I think I remember what quarter it was in, but we handed it off to A-Rob, and it was a play that was supposed to hit inside. Well, as A-Rob usually did, when he saw inside pressure, it was like, I'm faster than every single person on this field, so I'm going to go ahead and go outside. He went outside and ran for about 80 yards on the sideline, and for a guy who was 5'8" or 5'9", I never seen a guy stride like A-Rob, man. He'd be on that sideline, and you would think he was 6'5", you know, the way his legs were. But that was my favorite A-Rob memory, is that Army game where he took one on the sideline and it, you know, pretty much opened up that game for us.
What about you, Woody? You shared a meeting room with him in a position group with him forever. What's your favorite memory of that?
The A-Rob in the meeting room stories, it's not A-Rob in the meeting room. It's somebody else in the meeting room that we're making fun of because they're damn asleep. Yeah. That's – and you know exactly what I'm talking about. So the way the meeting room is set up is we got – before they finished the Bergstrom, we were in the Jacobson and the indoor, and the running backs actually got the coach's staff room. So it's this big conference room table, and there's a whiteboard on one side, and there's a projector screen, and Coach Pope would sit at the head of the table on the other side. And there's these big, like, office chairs that go above your head. So you're turning to watch the film, and the coach can't see your face. The dude that fell asleep every single damn meeting sat in all the way in the very front, and would, like, A-Rob would sit right across from him and would just turn. And, like, you could see that, like, flat face. I mean, like, man, the dude's asleep again. Coach Pope would call on him, like, hey, what do you got here? He'd wake up, drool on his mouth, going, what is it, 360? Yeah, I got defensive end. Nah, Bo, this is 41. This is a run play.
He dropped the name.
Hey, we had two Bos. You don't know which one I'm talking about.
There you go.
Oh, my. The play story, though, is against Missouri in that super freaking cold game that Arnaud was hurt for. There was one, I think it was the Missouri game, where it was a bounce. It was another one of the bounce plays, and there was a corner or a safety that tried to make a tackle, like run in the alley. A-Rob took this dude by the throat and just said, sit down. And the meanest stiff arm I've ever seen in my life from a dude that weighs just slightly more than a box of Cheerios.
My favorite A-Rob story is real quick. And everyone knows this story. Insight Bowl, halftime. We're playing Minnesota. And as you know, A-Rob is from the Twin Cities. And he came in at halftime yelling at Arnaud and then ended up at Colin Franklin and at the entire offense and then the whole team, mad that those guys on the other side of the ball were representing the Twin Cities from Minnesota because A-Rob is the real Twin Cities representer.
Southside.
And he kept yelling Southside and throwing up an S with his two thumbs, or his thumb connected
to
his
loved
index
it.
Finger. And he was so mad that Minnesota came into that game playing the way that they were and talking trash because they didn't deserve to represent the place that he was from. And he wanted to go prove it to them. And
he did.
I can
MVP.
Only imagine what he was saying after each whistle out there as well.
Oh, I'll just say this. I never started talking trash. I was never a trash talker. But they talked more trash than anybody I've ever played in my career.
It was ridiculous.
And to be as bad as they were, they talked more trash than I played in my life.
All right. Well, A-Rob, thank you so much. You're welcome to join us anytime. You're the man, as always. Thanks for jumping on. Thanks for listening every week, and we appreciate it, dude.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, for having me. I'll chat with you guys again tomorrow, obviously, in the group text.
All right, see you.
All right, 33.
All right, take care, guys.
Adios.
He's an awesome guy. The best.
God, I love that guy, man. God, I love that guy.
The best. All right.
He's one of the smartest dudes, too.
He's smart.
Like, he's a sharp
guy. We didn't get a chance to ask him what he's doing now, but Target Corporate is back in school right now getting his MBA, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Man, doing it.
He's the man.
Yeah, he'll send a text and be like, hey, sorry, I can't – I wasn't watching on Saturday. I had 10 chapters to read for my class.
Exactly.
He had no – Jeff, when was it he found out Mac Brown left the game early? It was late Saturday night, wasn't it? So it happened late – the thing happened late Friday night last week. I told Austin first thing in the morning – on Saturday.
It was like Tuesday.
Yeah, and I told Austin first thing in the morning on Saturday. Austin obviously didn't believe me what happened, and then I finally had to sit down and explain it to him. He did. But, like, literally Sunday morning or late Saturday night, A-Rob started asking about it, and he didn't believe me, obviously. But the guy's just, like, he's so focused on other things, and he's not your typical, like, running back or former jock at all. Football does not define that man at all.
Exactly, and that's what I'm going to say about A-Rob is, like, you know, when he played football, he was the most focused guy. He knew everything, but now that he's moved on, I bet you he is the best. He's one of the better employees that Target has. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
What's funny is everybody has the dynamics in a group chat, and the dynamics in ours is that Zach and I are all the time posting, all the time.
Yep.
And Austin, every once in a while, comes in with, like, a quick zinger. And then A-Rob has a conversation. He jumps in the conversation about 4.5 hours after the conversation has passed, and wants to bring up the stuff because it's new to him. So that's the dynamic.
It's something we've covered like 10 hours ago. And then he always follows it up with, "My bad, guys. I had to read 3 chapters."
Yeah. Anyway, well, let's get on with this deal, boys.
I want to talk to you guys about the feeling of Park not playing on Saturday. So Lanning and Park, we've been told, we're going to share snaps and have been the last few weeks. I can't complain that Park didn't play because I thought Lanning was on fire and played really well and was firing all cylinders. Austin, you and I talked during the game, and then you and I had a really spirited conversation after the game at all of your friends' house. And, you know, to paraphrase, you said that you were surprised that they didn't play both quarterbacks, and you had talked with some people within the program on the team or you know, within the program or on the staff, and they said that they were planning on playing two quarterbacks for as long as it took to define a true clear starter, someone who could take every single snap, even if it had to be over the next 2 years. Something that you didn't necessarily buy, and then they followed it up by 24 hours later playing just one quarterback the whole time, and he looked pretty good. And then, you know, you and I talked about how Lanning must have had a really good week of practice to come out and look that good. But you did go to walkthroughs on Saturdays. On Friday afternoon, you said it didn't look that good. So, Austin, take us through your thought process on the quarterback. Or are you okay with Park not playing any on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine with it. I think it's a situation of just you don't leave the hot hand. I mean, Joel played the best game of his life at Iowa. I mean, at Iowa State. I mean, he won a state championship in high school. But I imagine, you know, throwing the football, running the football, all things encompassing, that was his best game as a Cyclone. So it was good to see. And I really, you know, to me, that really gives me confidence in Coach Manning, in the quarterback coach, in that room, in Coach Campbell, because this is a guy, as we've talked about before, Coach Campbell has said and come on publicly said that we're going to play two guys. We're okay with it. We like the dynamic these guys bring. They are competitive towards each other. They both have the best thing in mind for the team. And I went out there, I was out there at walkthrough, just walking through, you know, their plays are going to run in certain situations and all that good stuff, you know, the day leading up before the game. And neither one of the quarterbacks jumped off the field at me. You know, I look at it, I watch it, and, you know, it was just an average walkthrough practice. You know, there were some throws they missed and there were some throws they hit, but it wasn't a overlying that Joel Lanning had a better day. But as you watched in the game on Saturday, there was no doubt who was in control of that team and that offense. Joel Lanning, and from what I've heard in the inside and outside, has had a great few weeks of practice in a row, and you've seen that. San Jose State, he improved. So
yeah.
Did Park.
Yeah.
And then the next week, he's improved, and this is his best game as a Cyclone. So I'm excited for the future for what Joel Lanning can bring. But, guys, once again, I'm not going to put out Jacob Park as a quarterback in this offense.
Exactly.
He's going to play next week. I guarantee you he plays Saturday.
Yeah.
I mean, unless Lanning starts the game with six consecutive touchdown drives again.
So, exactly.
I mean, the thing with, like, that I've started, I don't know if it's like a Stockholm syndrome thing where we've had two quarterbacks for so long, I've kind of like justified it in my head that I'm actually okay with it. And I kind of like the perception that there is, not necessarily perception, but the reality, there are two quarterbacks that you have to prepare for as a defense. Because the thing that I liked, and you talked about play calling earlier, the thing that I liked about the game is that it was called very well to Joel Lanning's strength, because Iowa State ran the ball extremely well. And Joel is not a drop-back passer. He's not a guy that's just going to sit there and pick you apart. That's Jacob Park. Jacob Park is the drop-back, stand-in-the-pocket passer. What Joel is Joel is a play action or throw-off run action, throw on the move, half roll or full sprint out. He's that guy. And they got to do that with him because of how well they were running the ball. Well, say Oklahoma State, I don't know if they are or not. I've heard they're a slightly better but not great version of Baylor's defense. Say, for example, we're not running the ball very well at all, but we are gashing them from the pocket. Well, the guy that's probably more suited to do that is going to be Jacob Park. So, again, from a defensive perspective, you have to prepare for a run-heavy, throw-on-the-run quarterback in Joel Lanning, or you switch to more of a pro style stand in the pocket, pick you apart passer with Jacob Park. And as a defense, you have to account for both. So, like Austin said, I'm not sold that Joel is the dude, and I think it's okay that he's not, because just like A-Rob was saying with the running backs, it's competition to push each other, but it's also splitting the defense's time straight down the middle and saying you got to account for both.
Yeah. So the quarterback was a big question, or a big deal coming out of the game, how well Lanning played, and also that Park didn't play after his awesome performance the week before. Another big storyline, we already kind of talked about it with A-Rob earlier on the show, but the defense got just straight up ran through, literally like right up the middle. Why in the hell was that so easy besides the bad tackling? I mean, this team is a very bad tackling football team. They proved that throughout the first quarter of the season. Jeff, what were you seeing up top in the box for Baylor just to run right through us?
Kamari. Kamari, Kamari, Kamari. That's what.
He was missing tackles, what?
So Kamari was – he played in the first three drives, and then I don't know if it was a knee to the head or a knee to the shoulder –
It was a shoulder. Austin, didn't we see a shoulder, like, look out of socket at one point?
Yeah, yeah.
When he's jogging off the field, yeah.
It was something. But he got – it was at a, on the touchdown scoring play on the on Baylor's third drive. Well, in the
it was his right shoulder, yeah.
On the first three drives, Baylor went punt, fourth down stop, touchdown. In three drives, they scored one touchdown. So Kamari then became injured, and after that point, he wasn't 100%, so he was just as good as his backups, which still pretty damn good, but not Kamari. And to slow down Baylor, you have to be an exemplary player like yeah. Kamari Cotton-Moy is. So from that point, what Baylor did, so keep in mind, they went, like I said, punt, fourth down, touchdown in the first three drives with Kamari in the game. After that, they went touchdown, 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 punt, touchdown, touchdown, field goal. And there's no way to quantify how good he is other than looking at that drive chart. Yeah. Because what Kamari provides against a Baylor offense is you can't – it's again, so I wrote about this in the Register. Is you Baylor, I call it the Baylor paradox because – they lead the nation, or they led the nation last year in plays exceeding 30 yards. They had 58 plays in 13 games that exceeded 30 yards, which is insane. On the flip side of that, they were second in the country in rushing offense. They outrushed Navy, Air Force, Georgia Tech, and there's another another triple option program. They outrushed all of those schools. So you have to play safeties deep to account for that 30-yard-plus explosive play, but then you also have to have safeties that react and play down in the box to stop the run. What Kamari does, what he allows you to do, is he can play tighter to the line of scrimmage because he knows exactly where to get to in pass defense, but he also reads and reacts much faster than any other safety and is a sound tackler. So with Kamari in the game, you solve three problems to stop Baylor's defense. As soon as he's gone, those problems pop back up. So Iowa State's defense missed a ton of tackles, but not having a full and healthy Kamari against that offense in particular was a damning blow to have him out of the game.
Austin, you and I were sitting there watching the game with Jake Williams, former wide receiver for us, and at one point in the third quarter, you know, throughout the last few weeks and on Saturday, you talked about some of the stuff that you liked out of the pass rushers and the defensive line. You also talked about things that you didn't like, and then Jeff did the same, goods and bads. You looked at me at one point in the third quarter and said, Zach, we got a lot of 50-50ers out there on the defensive line. And you kind of explained it to me as guys that are going 50%, you know, guys that are going hard half the time and guys that are taking plays off, guys that are giving full effort, guys that aren't giving full effort. What are you seeing out there that made you snap to me and Jake and say that?
Well, as Baylor started to make their imprint and, you know, our offense was on the field less, that had something to do with it as far as, you know, the guys were getting a little bit tired. But, you know, there was a couple of plays where I watched that front four and they stand straight up and get blocked. I mean, you can't do that. If you're going to do that, tap your helmet, bring another guy in. I mean, I would rather have someone with lesser talent going hard the entire time than a guy stand straight up and get blocked. I mean, if you're you know, a 6'5", 6'6" defensive end, and you're standing straight up and letting them block you, you're of no use.
Yeah.
So bring a guy in that's going to come and play hard all the time. And Jeff alluded to it last week with you know, the maturity of DeMond Tucker and trying to make him play every single play and not, you know, that one play we talked about where he kind of, you know, swimmed opposite of a run of a block down situation where he needs to be there to make a play. You know, it's another time where our defensive line kind of went rogue. So, and that's part of the struggle. And coach, and I always come back to this when people ask me about Iowa State. You cannot change culture overnight. Those guys that are on the defensive line this year, with the exception of Mitchell Myers, and JD, have played quite a bit of football for Iowa State, and they're used to a certain type of way. So I'm trying to get those guys not to. I mean, obviously play harder, but they've got to think different. You know, if you can't do it, if you are completely gassed, tap your helmet. I know you don't want to come out of the game, but it's better for your team in the long run to have a guy that's going to come in with fresh legs and give us a pass rush or give us a run after the ball. And that goes back to what A-Rob was talking about with the angles. A couple of times, you know, defensive linemen in the past, you know, can run down from the opposite side of the field and make a play on the backside having an angle. But, you know, you just didn't see that a few times in the second half with Saturday, which is concerning. But I know they were tired. I know there was stuff going on. But
you know, you got to bring it every single play. And this is, you know, this is I'm going to be my Dan Hawkins here. This is a Division I football. This ain't intramurals, brother.
This ain't intramurals, brother.
You got to go every play.
Yeah. So I flew home early Sunday morning back to Dallas, and on my flight was play-by-play guy for Fox Sports who did the game, Tim Brando. And we sat next to each other.
You sat next to Tim Brando on the plane?
Tim Brando.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he does a bunch of Boston College games, so I have a semi-relationship with him or whatever, but we talked about the game. And
Time out. Is that our first humble brag? Is that our first humble brag in the podcast?
He did say he was on the field for the game earlier, too, but
second humble brag. So I was on the field, and me and Tim Brando are friends.
I did not say me and Tim Brando are friends. I say I know the guy because I've worked next to him before. And
Zach, we love giving it to you, brother. It's
also
all good.
Was on the field too. No, and also sat next to three really nice Baylor guys that were more than complimentary of many things about Central Iowa, Iowa State fans, and our team, and thought that Matt Campbell was going to get this thing turned around quicker than any of us thought. But Tim Brando brought up 2 points to me at the end of the game. One that any obvious person that knows football knows about, that the two burn timeouts early in the second half killed us.
Yep.
And then number two, he wanted to know from Cyclone Nation, and he said he talked about it on his broadcast, but he wanted to know from Cyclone Nation, if you could do it over again, would you let Baylor score there with under 2 minutes and take your chances at trying to fire back and go get your own touchdown to try to win it, have the ball in your hands to try to win it? Someone answer.
That's interesting. You want to take this, Joe? I can take it. I think you bow your neck. You don't want to put – I mean, especially with a team that, you know, mentally is, you know – inexperienced as we are with this coach, I think you bow your neck and try and get a stop, but I can see the logic.
So I think it's the drive starts as a no, and then once you get inside about the 30, it becomes a yes. Because at that point, it becomes inevitable. So think back to the most recent Patriots-Giants Super Bowl, and Ahmad Bradshaw for the Giants is going in, and it's a tie ball game. And there's about a minute and 40 seconds left on the clock, and the Patriots have no timeouts left. And all of a sudden, they run the snap. They're on the 20-yard line going in. They take a snap, and the Patriots defenders just split, and they stand there. And they let Jennings go, and he tries to stop. And then he ends up, like, falling his butt into the end zone because he couldn't stop his momentum. Well, that gave, on the other side of that, that gave Brady a heave chance to throw it into the end zone, and Gronkowski missed a touchdown by maybe, 2 or 3 yards, maybe. So it at least puts your destiny in your own hands. So I think as they started that drive, because it was coming – Iowa State, it was coming right out of Colin Downing, the longest punt in the Big 12 this year at 67 damn yards.
Yeah.
Love it.
It was a long field. Yeah, it's too bad I was hoping we didn't have to use him at all. That would have been awesome. But it was that long drive. Once they got about across maybe the 40 or the 30 yard line, I think in the moment, if you can take a page out of the Bill Belichick playbook and say, yeah, let them score, we're going to be the ones that control this destiny and not let them dictate terms. So it's a no and then a yes.
Okay. So last thing about the Baylor game, we'll talk about this quickly, but we would be idiots if we didn't bring this up, because this was a big score in that game. Right before halftime, Baylor goes in. For a split second, Iowa State thinks they strip Seth Russell there at the goal line and get a fumble on a touchback. Arnav and I are in the stands watching it on the big screen. Austin says two things to me that were very good points. He said, one, the call on the field is going to be big here. And then number two, he told me to watch it as if that was Iowa State's quarterback going into the end zone there and see, as an Iowa State fan, with Iowa State having the ball right there, what I thought. And that instantly made me watch it, that where I saw enough evidence where I could say, yeah, that could be a touchdown. And then shortly right after, Jeff, you were up in the booth. You had the audio and video of it, and you texted us and said that was going to be a touchdown. And then after the game, Austin and I talked about it with some of Austin's friends out at the tailgate, and Austin said that, you know, the call on the field has to be huge there, that the fact they did call it a fumble, that a clear recovery by the Cyclones and a touchback going to be Iowa State's ball to run out the first half clock. But apparently they went in and saw enough evidence. Now, that's up for grabs from anyone. If you saw enough evidence to think that was a fumble, or if you saw enough evidence that he had possession of it as he went across the goal line. Now, Austin, after the game, you said the call on the field has to be bigger there, and that if that's Baylor, you know, if that is not Baylor there, do they still get that call? If that's Iowa State right there, is that still, you know, hey, we went back and looked at it, we don't have enough evidence, you know, that's still a fumble and a touchback, that's going to be Baylor's ball. Do you think that Iowa State would ever get a call like that?
No. And it's proved itself. You know, Coach Pollard got – I mean, not Coach Pollard, sorry. Jamie Pollard got upset last year about this, and rightfully so. I feel like more – and I'm not calling conspiracy, but I am. Because in the simple fact that this happens – there's calls like this that happen to us every single year. Actually, probably about every single – once a month, it seems like,
big
in the football season.
Big spots, too. Big spots.
In huge spots. And I am the last guy to blame a referee. We played against some teams. We had some calls go against their way. I understand that. But you cannot tell me that the original call on the field, and that's what we always talk about when they first introduced review into college football, into big major sports, the review, the call on the field has to weigh more than, I mean, has to have some significance. So usually they err on the side of caution. So if they – here's my biggest deal with it. If they call that a touchdown –
yeah.
Absolutely. If they call that a touchdown by Baylor initially and then they review it, I have no problem with it. But the call on the field was touch – the call on the field was fumble, Iowa State ball.
Yeah.
So then let's go under the hood. Let's take a look at it. And I just knew the second they went under the hood that it was bad for us, because there's no doubt that they're going to – okay, this is Baylor, number 13 in the country. They are down right now. You know, let's throw him a bone, so to speak.
Yeah, and they had
that's how I feel. And can sue me. I mean, that's how I feel about
it. Yeah, and I'm going to let Jeff answer this.
Did you just say sue me?
Yeah, he did.
Sue me! Sue me if I'm wrong! Just sue me about it!
Hey, yeah, I'm going to let Jeff answer this, but just follow up with Austin there. So I was watching it on the replay, and like I said, I had to convince myself and talk myself into it over a 3 or 4 minute span of saying, okay, yeah, if that was Iowa State on the other side of it, I could see it being a touchdown. But we're talking about refs who are supposed to go underneath the hood without any bias, any care. They just want to make sure they get the call right. And I had to talk myself into it on the other side of it, you know, saying if that was Iowa State's quarterback, I would be fighting for them and praying that they call that a touchdown. Where
if Baylor fumbles the football there, the game – if Baylor fumbles right there, Iowa State wins the game.
Yeah, there's no clear evidence.
Simple.
There. It's all hope and wish and whatever. Now, if they would have called that a touchdown on the field – then I, you know, they go underneath the hood and they confirm that, hey, this is a touchdown on the field. There's no clear evidence that there was a strip and a fumble in time. That's fine. But like you said, that call on field has to be bigger, has to weigh a lot more. Jeff, your thoughts from seeing it up top?
I don't want to be like the contrarian, and I'm the last one to be a referee apologist. But I thought it was a mistake in the first place that they called that a fumble.
Yeah, which is fine.
That's what we're saying. That's what we're saying too. I'm just wish the first call would have been right.
When you look at that from review, when I sent that message of I'm pretty sure that's a touchdown, it was from the very first angle, the very first review, because all it takes to be a touchdown is to have possession of the ball, you are not down, and one single ridge of the football has to cross the first tiny little iota of chalk in the end zone. And then after that point, it doesn't matter what happens. You can fumble through the end zone, but as long as you possess the ball at that point, it's a touchdown. And Russell, his fingers and the ball, he was holding it with the ball in his palm, with the football facing him and his fingers facing the other side. His fingers were in the green, and the ball was on the white with it in his possession, and then the ball got knocked out. And it was plain as day in the replay angle that we saw. And when you're – it's a different aspect watching the game from in the stadium or in your house – to watching the game in a media or in a media suite or not a suite, a media a booth, because you physically feel more objective in that moment. And it looked at from the first replay that it was a touchdown. And the only way that Iowa State was going to get it is if it was a mistake and they called it wrong. Yeah. So it was definitely a touchdown. I think now to undo my Brent Bloom referee apologist set up right now, it was definitely a missed call later in the game when they jumped off sides, Bobek fire snap that he didn't get back on sides. That was definitely a bad call. But again, like terrible. I said, let's not blame it on the officials. because even if you fire snap it, that has to be a good snap. It has to hit him in the chest. It has to hit him in the belly so he can at least handle it and do something with the ball. So I'm not saying the refs were good, because I thought they were hanky-happy in the first half and then didn't throw a damn thing in the second. So I don't think it was well officiated, but that call in by itself, I think it ended up being right. And, you know, I'm not going to argue that the call on the field shouldn't have more significance,
yeah,
but it was wrong from the jump, and they actually got it corrected.
Yeah. Okay, so that's it for the Baylor game. I want to quickly shift to the Oklahoma State preview here. Not going to spend
the Fighting Mason Rudolphs.
Yeah, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this as we've got to still get to the gambling segment and then get out of here, because we don't want to take up everybody's workday listening to the podcast. But we do appreciate it. And everyone that reached out to us over the weekend or that saw us, I know Austin and I got plenty of people said that they listened to the show and they appreciate us doing it. So we do appreciate you guys listening. Anyways, we play Oklahoma State this week. We all remember the last time we beat Oklahoma State. Was an awesome day, and Jeff, you put the big bow on that victory for us. Thank you. But I want to go over some numbers here. They're 4-0 against us since we beat them in 2011. Their average win has been 40-22, and then in Stillwater alone, it's been 34-15. Oklahoma State is scoring 41 points per game this season. Can our defense stop them? That's obviously going to be the big question. And as Jeff said earlier in the show, from his understanding and from what he's read and stuff, that they're just a slightly better version than Baylor's defense, so we may have the opportunity to outscore them. I know it's going to be tough for our offense, especially with how good their offense is at scoring 41 points per game. So we're only scoring 22 points per game. So I don't know about our chances down there. We don't play particularly well down there, but they don't really like us. One of the guys that I live with here in Dallas is an Oklahoma State graduate. So he's a ticket holder. He's going to the game. And he was actually in Ames the night that we beat them in 2011. So he's got terrible memories of Iowa State. And
does he want me to sign a towel?
No, but you
I'll
should.
Sign
so all the
I'll
Iowa
sign a towel
love
it.
All the Iowa State stuff I have around the house, he doesn't like at all. And has since moved from the living room upstairs to my domain and back into like my office and everything. All like my blankets and my helmet and the plaque of us or the poster of us rushing the field after we beat Oklahoma State, all type stuff. He's not a particular fan of. But Austin, you've got a great Oklahoma State story. Remember the time you played Oklahoma State and Dez Bryant was really good?
Oh, Dez Bryant, Justin Blackman, Zach Robinson, Brandon Weedy.
Russell Okung.
Played them all.
Russell Okung.
Russell Okung, Joseph Randall, Kendall Hunter. You know, it was a who's who. Eric, hold on. No, who's the tight end? Not
Pettigrew. Tyler, Texas. Brandon Pettigrew.
Pettigrew.
Justin Gilbert at corner.
Oh, yeah. He was good. Hey, Jeff, when you scored the touchdown against Oklahoma State to win, you ran, the final two or three plays of that game?
It was the final three.
Final three. Was it all the same play?
Yes. It was all
– Tom Herman.
It was all run inside zone – and you cut off of Kelechi Osemele.
Were you even worried about cutting or holding on to the ball? I've watched him play 1,000 times.
God, no.
Like all you wanted to do was just wrap up the football. And you were okay with getting 3 points.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing is the only way that we lose that game at that point was if we turn the ball over. Because as bad as our kicking situation had been, if you get inside of 20 yards, Geyer was pretty much automatic from inside of 20 yards. And so all we had to do is not turn it over. And we knew we were going to run the ball. So my job, safely get the exchange and don't fumble. Like, those are my two jobs. The only thing you have to worry about, anything on top of that, is just cake. And so all I was trying to do was protect the ball. And they made me look really good because they weren't really trying to tackle me because they understood the situation. That's true. They were just trying to strip the ball out.
And KO was knocking down like three people at a time.
Oh, my God. On the left side. Like, I retweeted a picture earlier this week because I think KO actually tweeted it. It was still the most impressive football play I've seen from an offensive lineman. What inside zone is there's five offensive linemen. They all step in the same direction. And generally speaking, the running back finds if the offensive lineman can get somebody reached, I'm going to cut inside of that guy. If they don't get anybody reached and they just wash everyone by, I cut behind the whole offensive line. Well, KO is the left tackle, and we're running to the right, and I'm probably going to cut all the way behind him. So what KO does is a defensive end, and he grabs him and throws him into a linebacker, knocks them both over, and lands on top of them. So not only did he get a pancake,
he got a pancake on top of a pancake. He gave himself a short stack. And Beast. It was the most impressive play I've ever seen from an offensive lineman. And you watch it on film and you're like, oh my God, this guy's – yeah, well, he's real good.
The underrated thing about that final play on film is there's KO over there. There's a tight end. I forget who the tight end is.
Hammer. It's Hammer Smith.
It's Hammer and then Albert Gary, and all three of them block their asses off on that play. And you go, Albert Gary's guy finally trips you up when you're about a half a yard into the end zone. But I'd never seen Albert Gary block like that in my life. But thank God he did.
What's the other funny part about that is on the bigger run, the second one, Jacob Gannon, who was at the time a sophomore, redshirt like freshman. Pounds. I mean, he was a guard. I mean, he was like 38 pounds. Like he weighed the same as like a McDonald's value meal. And he gets blown off the ball. I mean, knocked like 3 yards back. And I ended up actually cutting behind that guy. So like the guy beat Gannon so bad that I cut underneath him.
All right. Austin, you got gambling? You ready?
I'm ready, man. I am ready for you guys. Now, last week you got cut. You know, I don't know what happened there. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Zach.
It's okay. You can't. No, it's okay because it's okay because
for a reason, guys. And you can't blame the audio guy who's also hosting the show. That's 2 months to be done.
Hey,
I don't see any.
You have large shoulders, man. We rely on you. Come on, kid. All right, now moving on. Now we're gonna move outside the Big 12 and the Big 10 this week, just this week, because there's a lot of, you know, not great games. So I want to take us to the SEC. Tennessee coming off a big win against Georgia, by the way.
How about those clowns? Holy.
Oh my God, man. What a way to finish that game. Was that not one of the most insane endings?
It was incredible.
It was. That's one way to describe it.
Tennessee at Texas A&M. Texas A&M, 7-point favorite at home. 7 points. It's a lot of points in the SEC.
Man, the Aggies are going to roll them up, man. Give me Aggies in the points.
Okay.
I'm not convinced. Because the thing is, Tennessee, they'll find a way to mess it up as bad as they can in the first half. And then crawl back into the game and somehow make it competitive in the second half. So I think 7.5 is a really, really big line, even at home for A&M. So I'm going to give me Tennessee. I'll take Tennessee.
Take Tennessee. All right, Tennessee. Jeff wants Tennessee. Gosh, this is a tough one, guys. This is very tough. Oh, as much as I don't want to roll with Jeff on this, I have to. 7 points is a lot of points. I don't think we've – I mean, Texas A&M has played who? Not a lot of people.
Arkansas?
Not nobody.
Arkansas?
Well
– the fighting Paul Rhodes and Wally Burnhams.
And they lost Arkansas, correct?
No, they beat them.
No.
They beat them like 41 to 20.
No, they lost.
No, they
– My car – I lost that day. My car got towed while I was at the game, so I lost.
Yeah, that was a Jerry World.
Yeah.
I'm with Tennessee. I'm with Jeff on this one. NFL game, moving on, guys. Now, there is an interesting game here, and it has to do, again, with, once again, Zach's Dallas Cowboys. The Bengals come into town, and the Bengals, it is a pick 'em, guys. Is it an even spread? Bengals at Cowboys.
Look,
what do you think, Z?
Look, man, I don't know why it is, because check me out. Skandrick's hurt. He still hasn't practiced all week. Mo Claiborne has a stinger in his shoulder. Tyron Smith hasn't practiced yet because of his stinger. His backup is not going to play at left tackle. And so I've got Cincinnati winning this game. I do an office pool pick at the office, and I pick Cincinnati to win. And all my other friends that are Dallas Cowboys fans want to shun me from the group. But look, it's logical. It's a rookie quarterback going on the road, and Cincinnati will be the best team that they've played all season, no doubt about it. Cincinnati's going to win this game. Who can cover A.J. Green? Are you kidding me? With healthy defensive backs, they couldn't cover A.J. Green. Give me the Cincinnati Bengals.
What do you got, Jeff?
Yeah, what he said.
Sorry, I break down. I take my dad's with football seriously, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to take Cincinnati.
I'm 100%. And also, I have Andy Dalton going to fantasy. So any quarterback, like you told me last week, Zach, any quarterback who is playing the Dallas Cowboys, you should have them in fantasy. So yes, I'm on it.
Thank you. I'm glad you listened
to me. Unless it's Jay Cutler.
Hey, Austin.
Hoo-wee.
Austin, in my pick'em, Jay Cutler didn't play against us. Brian Hoyer did.
Excuse me. It's Brian Hoyer. The journeyman,
Austin,
Brian Hoyer.
In my pick'em, I also picked Detroit. I know Danny, your buddy's going to kill me.
Yeah, so did I.
I've got Detroit beating Philly.
I picked. Oh, I thought you were talking about last week. No, I'm in a freaking eliminator challenge. I was in a freaking eliminator challenge, and I was perfect until I picked the Lions over the Bears, and the Bears had to finally get the first win of the season.
It sounds like a Wizard of Oz story.
Oh, man.
The Bears over the Lions.
Oh, my. You know? Yeah, you are 100% on, Zach. Jeez. The fact that you guys watched that game is pretty embarrassing, so let's just stop it there. That is two putrid football programs. Obviously, the North, the NFC North, and my voice is getting higher as I talk about these Minnesota Vikings guys. I tell you what, man. I'm sounding like John Gruden over here. I tell you what, man. Those guys can play some football, man. I love it. They are at home against the Texans. Yep. Yeah, Spider 2, white banana.
Oh, that'll do it for us. Thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of Barely Audible on CycloneFanatic.com. Make sure you tune into us each week as we talk all things Iowa State football, breaking down games, schemes, assignments, stats, and previewing Cyclones games. We'll talk to you next week. Go State. Peace.